Ladies and gentlemen, your captain speaking. Kyle is off this week. As usual, I'm your captain now, Ken. And joining me today, taking Kyle's place, is Q. And we got B on the line. What's going on, B?
What up? What up? What up, Dom?
Chilling. What's up, Q?
What's going on, y'all?
Ralph will be on later once he gets situated, so we'll loop him in as we do each and every week. This will more than likely be our last show of the year. We just had one of the, I guess, best games of the year take place. We'll talk about that. Man, we have to kick things off, man, because everybody's talking about it. Last night, Kobe Bryant had both of his jerseys retired in L.A. It was a star-studded fest. There was a lot of people there to see it, to witness it. The Lakers did him justice by competing with the Golden State Warriors, took them to OT. Lonzo tried to be the man and give us a whole week of LaVar Ball, but his shot was blocked by David West. Durant was a killer, ice cold, hit the shot on Lonzo, and they end up losing. Kobe didn't stay to watch that. He got up and bounced. It's all about Kobe, man. So we actually have one of Kobe's biggest fans on the line, I remember. Q, what was your thoughts on everything that took place last night?
You know, it's like interesting to me how just – weird it kind of feels, man, to see like this guy that you've grown up with, you know what I'm saying, like in a league where it was really like just him, you know, Tim Duncan, KG, Paul Pierce. Those are the guys that I remember. Like, those are my first basketball memories. So I feel washed up seeing this dude getting retired and all that stuff. That's how I know my time is coming. But that's like first thoughts. But in terms of simply basketball, man, it's really just was a pleasure to see Kobe Bean Bryant, you know what I mean, like, do his thing. I'm not going to, you know, act like the man is dead and gone, but, you know, it's going to be weird seeing an NBA without Kobe Bryant in it, because there's just so many moments, like the 81, there's the, you know, the elbow jumper against the Suns, there's the, you know, almost damn near averaging like 30-something points in the season where he had with Smush Parker and Kwame Brown. Like, it's just those incredible moments. You know, him getting his fifth ring. Everyone thought he was going to get his sixth, like Mike. Those, you know, two great finals. I'm sorry, against the Big Three Celtics. Those things are just great moments, man. Kobe, man, it was definitely a pleasure and a treat to see a guy like that, you know, win and fail. Because there are moments where I did root against him. There are moments I did definitely root for him. It was interesting to see, you know, all the celebrities come out, like the Kendrick Lamars and all the, you know, the Shaquille O'Neals and the former Lakers, and Bill Russell came out. You know, he don't get out for, he doesn't leave the house or anything unless it's special. So the fact that he left the house for Kobe Bryant was very much very indicative of the career that he had as a player. Just what, second or third leading scorer of all time. I'm sorry. It's incredible, man. Those type of things, five rings, one MVP, one Finals MVP, you know, scoring titles. It's a fantastic career, man. 20 years on the same team. That's something that people who play for sports teams in general wish that they could do, but very seldom ever get the opportunity to do. So for Kobe to have this great 20-year career, man, the war that I saw him go with Iverson, you know, those type of things are special, man. I always remember those in my sports memories, and specifically basketball memories. So wrapping it up, it was an ultimate treat from time that he wore the Crazy 8s as his number 8 to the last time that he wore the Nikes as 24. I always had an admiration and then sometimes a vitriol for Kobe Bryant, but it was always an eventful time to see him play basketball, man. And I will probably won't ever see a guy like him, because I was never able to really see Michael Jordan play. I don't have Jordan memories, really, besides the Wizards Jordan. So it's like that was like the closest thing to Jordan for me. So being able to see Kobe Bryant was kind of like that little glimpse into maybe this is what it could have been like if I was alive, you know, in 90 and 92 and seeing like Jordan win those championships. So that's what I remember Kobe Bryant as. And it was definitely a treat and a pleasure to see him. And I hope that in his retirement, he either does some type of analysis or some type of blogging. I know he's a smart guy, and I'm looking forward to his post-retirement self as much as I am going to look back on his career and watch highlights and all that stuff. So
yeah, I mean, seeing that is like, you know, it's a wrap. Like, you know, you're not going to have an NBA. Like, you know, he's going to be in the NBA anymore. It's done. It's a wrap. You know, I think I think he's the first or only player to ever have two different numbers retired on the same franchise.
Yep. Yeah,
I think that's pretty dope. Yeah, I think that's pretty dope because, you know, we all have like memories of number 8 Kobe and memories of number 24 Kobe. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, it's like you get the first half of the career is the number 8 and then the second half of his career is the 24. So it's just like, and it's amazing seeing people. Seeing basketball heads and stuff, people debate on which Kobe they would take. You know, I think that's kind of cool by him. It's the same person, but it's like we're talking about two different basketball players in a sense when you mention, you know, him wearing number 8 and him wearing number 24. And yeah, listening to Q talk about like Kobe and his watching his career make me feel old as hell, because like, you know, me, Ken, and Kyle, we witnessed a Jordan career. You know what I'm saying? Like Jordan's entire career. So like for him to talk about that and to talk about Kobe, I'm like, golly, Jesus Christ, I'm old as heck. you know, yeah, I mean, being younger, like when I was, you know, when Kobe first came to the league, maybe his first like 3 or 4 years when he started cementing his game, you know, and of course it was mimicking after Jordan. Yeah, I used to always have some type of feeling about it. Like, man, how are you mimicking your game? Literally, not granted, you know, at that time, people labeled Jordan as the greatest. It was like, if you're going to mimic someone, why not mimic the greatest? But, you know, skill set-wise, I mean, you know, Kobe ended up –
It's hip-hop culture, man.
I think that's what it is. It's like, dude, like, why are you mimicking your entire – and let's not be fair. I don't want to make it seem like I'm bashing Kobe, because like I have, even though I never care for him, and maybe this is me being a Pistons fan and hating the Lakers or whatever, but like I respect the hell out of Kobe. I mean, like I respect him like crazy. Like whenever we talk about top players, like regardless how personally I feel about Kobe, Kobe is a killer. He is a bona fide baller. Like I respect him to the highest level. But yeah, like I just said, growing up, being younger, you know, watching him, you know, in my, you know, late teens, early 20s when he first came in the league, I was like, man, you mimicking your game right after somebody. But you know, I love his basketball IQ. I love his willingness to work. Like he always, I'm glad he set example for, you know, young kids to like always work. This dude was already a 3-time championship, and he was still the first person in the gym and the last person out the gym. Still, people were like, dude, you just won 3 titles. Why are you still in the gym shooting around? Because he wanted to be that great. And that's one thing I love about Kobe, is his willing to be great. Like, that's what the thing I like about Floyd Mayweather. Like Floyd Mayweather is willing to be great. Like he just have that itch. He loved the sport. Kobe loved basketball that much, and he wanted to be great that much that he worked hard. Like he still worked hard even when he probably didn't have to work hard. He still wanted to be better than the next man that was coming up in the league. He still wanted to show you, look, I'm the top dog. I don't care who you are. You're a new kid on the block, LeBron James. Let me show you. Let me show you this work. Let me show you what I can do. I'm glad he took the challenge mentally and physically after Shaq left, because we was all questioning him like, dude, why are you pushing off the most dominant center ever, you know, one of the most dominant forces ever in the league? And we saw the first couple of years after Shaq left how he was having a hard time, but I'm glad he was able to, you know, fight through it, get some, you know, the Lakers organization had his back. They was able to get some guys around him, and Kobe got those 2 championships, man. He got those 2 championships off his back without Shaq. And you know, you know, just from someone that plays basketball, I was happy to see Kobe, you know, get through that challenge. Because, you know, that can be challenging mentally and physically, especially going through those Boston teams, which were great, great NBA finals, by the way. But, yeah, I just think overall, you know, Kobe, he's going to always go down as, you know, what people are going to say, the second best shooting guard in the NBA. And most people, you know, the people that like the Qs that never really witnessed Jordan, they'll say Kobe is the GOAT, you know. Because they'd be like, well, Kobe's a better 3-point shooter. Kobe was da 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 da. So, you know, people will make an argument saying that Kobe was better than Jordan because they never witnessed a Jordan career. But, you know, when you pretty much when you copy your game to someone, and he even asked Jordan, like, he asked Jordan these questions, like, how you do this? How you do that type of move? When you do that move, what you do? How you separate them? So, like, he got, you know, he got this stuff from Jordan. But, you know, but just at the end of the day, look, if you're going to mimic someone, mimic the greatest, and if you can pull off that template real well and do it to your best abilities, more power to you. But, yeah, Kobe will always go down, in my book, as the second greatest shooting guard of all time, like, hands down.
For me, when I think about Kobe, man, Kobe is blackness. Kobe is culture. That's what I think about Kobe, because he means so much to the black community. Like, he gave someone else to hang on to after MJ retired. Like, he just took over. He just took over the mantle. And you know, for people that loved MJ, they got a chance to see MJ's shadow playing the league. And not only that, he was able to live up to it, and people loved that team. And that's why he became such an icon. He was, people love that aggressive attitude that he had, his willingness to just be a killer, and that's what everybody talk about, and that's why some people lament that when it comes to LeBron and some of these other guys, like Kobe had it, and that was coming up, you know, from an era where you had Larry Bird's and Magic Johnson's and Isaiah Thomas's going out there and just getting it done and putting you to sleep that night because you think you're going to get the game, and they were like, nah, it's not going to happen. That's what we grew up watching. He was black art playing a game. Like, and it was special. And this is coming from a Kobe Bryant hater. I could not stand Kobe Bryant.
But you respected him, though, at the end of the day. Couldn't do nothing but respect him.
Yep. And the thing about it is that there came a point in time where I had to grow up and mature. And I just sat back one day. I was like, man, you know what? I'm going to just watch and enjoy the game. And I just appreciate it. Everything that Kobe did, and I just sat back and just enjoyed watching him play, and just made peace with, you know, that hate that I had in my heart for this dude, and just acknowledged that, you know, he was that dude. And so yeah, I think it's appropriate. I didn't even think about it the way you put it, B. Like, people are actually debating two different Kobes, two different games. Right. You know, that's freaking nuts, man. Like, that, right. Where does that happen? Crazy. So anyway, so that's that. So moving on, man. Look, the Steelers and the Patriots, they played. You guys by now have heard of the controversy. You guys have heard people talk about the catch, what wasn't a catch, what isn't a catch, blah 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 blah. I think when I think about this game, and you know, I'm just asking if you guys have any reaction to it, but just real quick, for me, I think looking at Ben Roethlisberger and what he's doing, I think for me, it's really painting a different picture of the unfairness, I think, that has been cast upon Tomlin over the last couple of years. For Ben to do that, to not take blame for what he did as a veteran QB, a two-time winning quarterback in this league who has been in multiple close games this year, for him to do that and then to not take responsibility for it is just crazy to me. And the thing about it is that the more and more people are just really just talking about what he's doing, people are really starting to talk about just Big Ben as a whole, because I never really paid attention to, like, his post-game antics, like I am now, because it's been highlighted. And I think what Ben was trying to do is, I think because of the way people have jumped on Tomlin, he's conscious of that. So he figured, hey, if I could throw this thing back on Haley and then try to also say it came from up top higher than him, maybe people will jump on Tomlin for that debacle at the end of the game and not me. And actually, it's working in reverse. Like, people are actually calling him out. He's not helping his cause at all. He's actually hurting himself. And you know, I'm hearing people actually look at Ben and this Tomlin situation and say, you know what, maybe Big Ben was the problem. And maybe it's not Tomlin. Tomlin, as always, straight to the point. Like, I don't care about replay. The game's over. He has, like you said today, you know, he can, you know, he's a veteran. He has a leash to do what he wants because he's in the game. He sees it. So I thought that was dope. And I think the last thing is that what Tomlin said 2 weeks ago about him looking forward to this game, and then last week saying it's going to be fireworks, it lived up to it because people were entertained. I didn't watch the game, but looking at the reaction and watching the box score and seeing how the game played out, it was everything that Tomlin built it up to be. And that's why I would like to see more coaches circle those games on the calendar and say, this is the one. I can't wait to play them because it's going to be fireworks. And because of what Tomlin did, he hyped up the game and the NBA and the NFL was able to sell it. And it was up to the teams to go out here and do it and to live, you know, do their part. And for what I've seen, they did. And it has every single storyline you could think of, man. A Brady comeback, a Roethlisberger comeback, and, of course, as usual, a controversial Patriot win. So that's the reaction that I have from the game, just everything that happened afterwards and just everything that's going on with Ben, man. That's just uncalled for, man.
Thing I took away from that game is, yeah, you're right, Ken. I'm glad the game lived up to the hype, you know, that we all expected coming from, you know, predictably the two best teams in the AFC. Teams that we are, you know, at this point of the season are kind of predicting that's going to be the AFC championship game. You know, but of course, you know, playoffs, anything can happen. But, you know, just as of right now on paper and just based off that game, I still think that those are going to be the two teams that's going to be playing in the AFC championship game. But yeah, it's unfortunate. This is the third time I think we had one of the B's get injured, you know, as in Brown, Bell, or Big Ben. You know, Brown had suffered an injury that's taken him out for the remainder of the regular season. He'll be back for postseason. And, you know, last time Bell was out, I think due to suspension. And the time before that, Big Ben was out with injury. So it's like we still haven't had the three B's, you know, all playing together healthy in an entire game. You know, that's unfortunate. But, you know, Steelers still, they have enough talent to win. Because, you know, Juju, that dude might be a young star in the making, man. I think he's going to really show his worth, I think, these next 2 weeks, you know, with the Pittsburgh Steelers try to clinch home court a bye in the AFC playoffs. I think Juju's going to step up. Martavis Bryant, you know, Ken, we can attest to this because we dropped him. He act like he wanted to play all of a sudden. So now he's acting like he's back finally. You know, they got the team. Bell easily the best running back in NFL. I don't know why people are still debating this. I don't know why people are still saying otherwise, but I would take 100% healthy Bell right now. He is the best running back in the NFL. And he's been that way for the past, you know, 2-3 seasons, give or take. So yeah, I think the game, you know, like you, I didn't watch it either. Just saw the highlights, just saw, you know, about what happened and everything. And of course, looking at certain scores because I'm playing fantasy football. But, yeah, I'm glad it did live, though. I'm glad we came down to the last dramatic moment. Unfortunately, it ended up bad for the Steeler fans and the Steeler organization. But, you know, looking at it, you know, just outside looking in, I'm just glad it lived up to the hype. And I'm glad Tomlin circled those type of games. Because, you know, fans, I mean, he was just saying what everyone else is thinking. It wasn't like, no, he didn't have to say a political correct answer. He's saying what the pretty much entire NFL right. fan base was thinking already. Oh, snap. This team 10-2. This other team, you know, 11-2 or whatever. I don't know the exact records at the time when he made that statement, but they both had great winning records and they both was the top of their division in the top of the conference. So for him to say that, and people was just looking, we was all circling it. Everyone was circling that. All football fans circling. And I'm just glad it lived up to the hype. But yeah, wonderful game. I hope we get this same type of intensity if these teams happen to meet in the AFC Championship game, because I'm assuming they're both going to have the 1-2 seed and they're going to have that bye. So, yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, man. Listen.
What's the matter? What's wrong? What's wrong, Q? What's the matter, man, brother?
Listen, man. This game right here was complete BS, dog. First off, let me give props where they do. Belichick is a mastermind. Tom Brady, you are the greatest system quarterback of all time. Let me give those props out real quick. And let's just break it down real quick, man. Every time the Steelers play the Patriots, one of the killer bees is out. Every single time.
Yep.
If it's not Brian out, it's Bell out. If Bell's not out, then it's AB this time. If it's not AB, then it's Ben. It's just like they can never, they've never seen them full squad, man. And like after a while, you might just have to look at the Steelers coaching, the medical staff, because they always hurt for some reason. They need to do a better job taking care of those guys. But when it came down to the last possession, man, I was just having a conversation with my pops, and I was just talking about, man, every time, and you know, he said something very like astute. He was like, man, every time the Patriots win a big game, it's because they have like some type of miraculous play, the other team does something stupid, or it's a weird interpretation of a rule that ends up going their way. And when you think about it, dog, it's really the truth. Like against the Seahawks, they refuse to run the ball. That's an unforced error by the Seahawks. You look at the Falcons, they refuse to run the ball, and they continue to blow a 25-point lead. When you look at the Steelers, AB goes out, and then they have this weird interpretation of a rule at the end of the game. The rule, man, the rule is terrible. Jesse James, what is the point of even having a plane and having the rule to break the plane if the moment you break the plane, that's not going to be applicable for a catch, but it is for a run? That rule makes no sense to me. It's a terrible rule that if a man catches the ball and he makes a football move by diving over the goal line, then that's not the end of the play. I don't understand how that's not a touchdown, but if Cam Newton or a running back stretches out for the goal line and then the ball comes out of bounds, they look to see if he just crossed the plane. That's the rule makes absolutely no sense to me, man. But when it comes to, you know, Ken's point, I pretty much agree. That Ben is, you know, he's old and he's grumpy, man. He's always been, from the very time that he, you know, got into the league, he's always been an asshole, man. He's always been a problem earlier on, and he's kind of become more of a team guy later in his career because guys, you know, started to call him out about his selfish behavior, the fact that he would call people out for no reason. You know, those off-the-field antics, you know, the stuff that he does in nightclubs, which we will not talk about at this point. You know, those type of things, they started to get on the teammates' nerves of his. And he kind of corrected them later on. But it reared its ugly head again where, you know, he's trying to, you know, make excuses for he should have just threw it out of bounds. You know, if it was that pressing, throw the ball out of bounds, go talk to your coach, and then say, we have 3 seconds left, let's go to OT. Because it was 24-27. There was no need to throw for the touchdown, and there was no need to go and put the ball at risk again of you being intercepted, batted down, you know what I'm saying, like with no time left. Those type of things can happen. But for him to throw the entire coaching staff under the bus saying that, oh, it was coming from the sidelines to do this and that. If you're a veteran and you know better, man, Tom Brady's going to throw that ball out of bounds. He doesn't care. If he sees his receiver, who I believe Ben told his team when they reversed the call, right after it, they hiked the ball, right, and they had to figure out what was going on. And Ben said, I told the guys to run fades to the corner so we could have time left if it didn't work. And then I guess Eli Rogers didn't hear it. He runs, you know, a slant on the inside. Two Patriots cover the ball up. One of the guys deflects the ball, and he gets a tip. It's a tip drill, interception, game over. In that situation, if Ben is so confused as to why he's running that slant, a veteran quarterback just throws the ball out of bounds. You have third down. You kick the field goal with 2 seconds left, and you go into overtime and try to win this to win the AFC. Instead, Ben throws the slant route because he's just like, F it. Let me go ahead and throw this. And it gets picked off. At what point do you have to be accountable for your own actions? I understand that what the coaching staff says to do is, you know, obviously important. But if you see that your directions to run the fades doesn't, you know, isn't conveyed properly, or they aren't taken, you know, into consideration, then perhaps you should, as a veteran, throw the ball away and kick that field goal. And I don't, and I just don't like how, you know, he threw Todd Haley and Mike Tomlin under the bus. And I'm no Mike Tomlin apologist. I'm no Todd Haley apologist. They both have made questionable calls in the past that cost them trips to Super Bowls and trips to AFC Championship games, obviously. But every coach has made questionable calls. And as a veteran quarterback, Ben Roethlisberger, you have to be better than that. You have to understand that what happened to you on that Jesse James touchdown was not something that to Mike Tomlin nor Ty Haley was had a contingency plan for. And now they will. You know, you took the Patriots all the way down to, you know, 2-yard line. You couldn't close it out. And that's fine. You won the game, but you lost to the referees. It's fine. You didn't have Antonio Brown, but you will have him again if his I think he had a partially torn calf, so he'll be back before the playoffs. So you put up a great fight without your best wide receiver and without your best deep back, Joe Hayden. They both should be back by playoffs. And you just have to be, you have to have some resolve in that. Instead of trying to divide your team of who did what wrong and who did what in this, what you need to do is look at the facts. I didn't have my Pro Bowl cornerback. I did not have possibly the greatest, you know, wide receiver in Steelers history to be, you know, on the field. I didn't have that. And we still almost won the game, and it took a fluky-ass call for the Patriots to win this game. So what is so, Ben, you just have to look at this and look at the facts, calm down. And I just didn't really appreciate, same way as Ken, I did not appreciate how he came for Ty Haley and Mike Tomlin. These are the type of things where you go into the locker room and say, oh, that's cool, y'all. We might have lost this game. But when we go to Foxborough, if we have to in the playoffs, we going to knock the snot out this team. Because they robbed us this time, and we've seen that we can beat them. Sean Davis, if you catch that easy pick six, then we're going to the AFC. You know, as the number one seed, we're going to the playoffs as the number one seed in the AFC. Home field advantage is locked up. If AB's on the field, then we're there. If Joe Hayden is there, perhaps then we can put a double over the top to stop Gronk from scoring in the fourth quarter. There's a lot of things that could have been done well. But the last thing you need is your veteran Hall of Fame, surefire first ballot quarterback to go out there and say, well, they came from the sideline and I just did what they told me to do. No, dude, just say we lost the game. That's fine. But we're going to be here again. And last time I checked, what, we're 11-3 now? Who cares? We can't really look back on the past now. It's time to go forward and rally the troops. And Ben Roethlisberger did not do that. And that's very, very, very disappointing as, you know, kind of like a guy who you're supposed to be, you know, the voice in the locker room. That's very disappointing, Ben.
Bebo, give us your take on Kobe's career. Retirement numbers. What do you think of Kobe's retirement and numbers and his career overall?
Man, Kobe's career was amazing. 20 years, one franchise. That in itself is extremely difficult to accomplish, especially since he kind of played through two eras. Toward the end was the new era of everybody moving around. In the beginning was kind of people still staying, but maybe, you know, testing waters, you know, because obviously Scottie Pippen moved on and stuff like that. So Kobe played against some of the greats on different squads as well. But for Kobe to stay at one place, to get two numbers retired, that's dope. I don't think there's another player in my recollection that has done that with one franchise. So that's pretty cool. I think that he took the template of the greatest and said, that's what I'm going to do. And he colored inside those lines and he did the best, you know, from the mentality to how he talks to everything. And for him to accomplish what he did, 5 championships in the process, you know, he's one of the greatest ever. He's definitely top 10.
Do you consider him like the last of the Mohicans? Like, as far as like that kind of like that old school mentality,
Because we see Russell Westbrook with that. You know, it was passed on to him. I think we see it in Kyrie, just different. He's just not as expressive, just his face. But obviously, he's a killer. We know that. I think there's a couple of guys around the league that still have it. I just think that it's always going to be a little bit different. But the closest guy toward what we remember is definitely Russell Westbrook.
So here's something interesting, right? So I was over my my in-laws and took the boys over there, and we were watching the game because they are big Falcons fans. And so the game was on. We sat there and watched it. And something came up that I didn't even know about, but I think one of them brought it up. Jameis Winston has one more year left on his contract, and he'll be a free agent. Ben has one more year left on probably one more year. He may play two, but we know the Steelers at some point will need a quarterback. Winston will be available. Do you guys think Winston would be a good fit for the Steelers with Tomlin?
I think that might be scary.
I don't know, man. Jameis got to show me some. I don't know.
Is he not a franchise quarterback? Are we questioning that right now?
I just don't really see it
for him right now. Yeah. He's still young.
Lab really commit himself to the game. I still think he's not in football shape, in my opinion. He's too fat for a quarterback to be that size. You know,
not this year. Rookie year, yeah. Like
he can a couple plays. But he just throws errant passes. His feet are rarely set when he's on the run. And I just don't really see it for him as, a Tomlin type of guy. I know that there are better quarterbacks out there. First off, I believe Aaron Rodgers is a free agent after this year. So if you're going to try to get a meeting with any quarterback, you want to see if you can do a Hail Mary and sign Rodgers, even though that's like a 1% chance of happening. Perhaps you could sell him the fact that you got Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell and break records like the best offense of all time. But I do think that there's a better quarterback out there than Jameis right now for what they could do. And I think it's Tyrod, man. I really do think Tyrod Taylor system could do a lot of good things. He'd be a much cheaper option, so they could afford to bolster their defense, because Lord knows they still need some corners and they still need safeties. Linebackers, too. They probably just need a whole D-line, honestly, besides Hayward and Tua. That's really it. I like the TJ Watt. In terms of Jameis, he just throws so many bad passes, and I just don't see it for him right now. I still stand behind Mariota's better quarterback than he is in the pros.
He is. I don't know what he's talking about right now.
Mariota's not necessarily killing it. It's kind of the contrast between a quarterback who's okay and one who's very meh. And I think that's the difference between Mariota and Jameis right now. Both are underperforming, like, I don't know what. And it's funny because they were supposed to be like the surefire guys, and Wentz and Goff were supposed to be the gamblers. Fantastic. And then the class before them looked like they needed to go back into the lab and work on some things.
Man, we don't care about any of that, man. You just said that Tyrod Taylor is a better fit than Jameis Winston. Bruh.
Yeah. So.
What are you talking about?
First off, the connections are the fact that Tomlin and Tyrod Taylor are both from the same neighborhood, and they both from the same program. They have close relationship. I think that the fact that you have a mobile quarterback who is being underutilized because Buffalo does not have the weapons that Pittsburgh has. He doesn't have a running back like Pittsburgh has, nor does he have an offensive line. One of the most pressured quarterbacks in the league besides Carson Wentz and Tom Brady has been Tyrod Taylor. But the fact of the matter is that he rolls out to his left and his right. He doesn't have no one to throw to because no one can get open because they've traded Sammy Watkins. For Jameis Winston, to me, as a QB, he was supposed to be in MVP conversations this year, man. And he's severely underperformed. He can't stay healthy. And he throws too many interceptions. And it's not even like the good interceptions where it's like, oh, they just got tipped. Like, he's throwing into double coverage on guys who are completely covered. And it's like, dude, after a while, man, you really need to just go back to the film room and figure out what you're doing wrong. And he just continues to make these boneheaded plays. I believe this is his third year now. And the Bucs are complete trash, dude. I'm not saying that's all his fault. All I'm saying is that when you give the ball back at a 3-1 rate, that's not good, dude. Like, you really need to work on that. And I'm not saying he's irredeemable. But, dude, Jameis is playing like some trash right now, man, to be very, very frank.
Coaching. They never should have got rid of Lovie Smith. That was the problem. They never should have got rid of him. Cutter is just not that guy. You get Tyrod Taylor, you got you just another, maybe a better Cordell Stewart. No, never.
He's better than Cordell Stewart.
Ralph, you were saying that would be scary. I need to hear somebody talk some sense.
Yeah, man. I think you take Jameis, you put him in Pittsburgh. That's kind of scary. Mainly because when I evaluate quarterbacks, I look at this. What's the median line? Who's the 14th, 15th guy in the NFL? Because all those guys on that list, 14 and higher, are going to make the playoffs. And Jameis is on that list. So, to me, he's a playoff quarterback. And if you're a playoff quarterback and you build the team right, you can win a Super Bowl. That's all you need. You don't need to have the number one guy to win a Super Bowl. Ask the Ravens. They did it twice. You know what I'm saying? So when I look at that situation, you just got to look at the pieces that are already in place. He doesn't have Mike Brown. You know what I'm saying? Or, I mean, Antonio Brown. Even though,
Evans or DeSean Jackson?
Yeah. Mike Evans. DeSean hasn't been healthy since he left Philly. But Mike Evans, you know what I'm saying? He's their weapon. And he's no Antonio Brown. They don't have who's the running back name? You know I'm bad with names.
Le'Veon Bell. Oh, you're talking about Tampa.
So, you know, like he doesn't have Le'Veon Bell. He doesn't have Tomlin with championship experience. Like he just doesn't have those things. So when you go to a situation in football that has more pedigree, I'm not saying that you're going to take 3-4 levels up, but you take at least a bare minimum or half level up. You know what I'm saying? And like D said, Jameis is still young. He's only going to get better with the more practice, the more reps, the more situations, the more experience that he gets placed in. And I just think overall, Pittsburgh is run better. What they've had three coaches in their whole existence.
Yeah,
that's how you run an organization. They have championship pedigree, and it has passed on through those three head coaches. That's what they have. That's what Tampa Bay will never have unless miraculously they just go get John Gruden again. That's the only way. That's the only way. But if I'm Jameis, I'm definitely looking for other pastures.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like I mentioned the Q. Yeah, Jameis is still young. I think we can't put the verdict out on him just yet. I think that would be an interesting fit. I like Jameis Winston's attitude. I like his attitude when it comes to playing football and his desire to win. Maybe it might not come out as the way he designed it when he eat his fingers and suck on his fingers as a W and do all types of weird, you know, pregame stuff. I love the enthusiasm, and, you know, like he has the urge to win. So that's good. I think he's still trying to learn to get it. He's trying to get it. I think, like people said, if you put him in a situation like Pittsburgh, a more, you know, an organization that's more sustained, more stable, per se, you know, under a good coach and Tomlin, man, I think Winston would be all right, man, especially if he inherit weapons like Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown, if he happens to go there. I think Winston would be all right, man. I think he'd be okay. I don't think, not definitely no Tyrod Taylor over no Jameis Winston. I definitely wouldn't look at that. Not saying that Tyrod Taylor's going to be a bum or anything, but just right now, just off face value, I'm not picking Tyrod Taylor over Jameis Winston or Mariota.
Have y'all actually watched Tampa Bay this year?
Not since last season.
Not since last season. Okay.
Last season.
Yeah.
Because y'all talking like people who have not seen Jameis Winston play this year. And, dude, he's just not playing very, very well. It's not even like a young type thing. It's like why did you throw that ball into triple coverage? I know Mike Evans is 6'5", but damn, dude. I'm not saying Tyrod Taylor is a savior. I'm saying that I think for a cheaper option, because Pittsburgh has to pay Le'Veon Bell, because they can't really pay Jameis Winston all that money like a quarterback is going to want. They still have to, because I believe Bell's on franchise tag, and they have to re-sign a bunch of guys. So for a cheaper option, for a guy who, you know, who's through for what, 3,200 yards last year with Tyrod, like, that's not a bad option to pick up, and he's mobile.
And so Winston has been making that many bonehead plays this season?
Dude, it's really bad, man. Like, you really got to go back and look at the film. Like, I mean, he's missing guys across the middle, like, and it's just like, really concerning for his development as a QB. Like, normally when you saw, like, for example, all right, so Cam in his first year, he had a pretty good first year, and that second year he declined. But the thing is that a lot of that was more of a indictment on not only coaching, offensive line, and the weapons that were around him. He didn't have much, so he was forcing plays. Tell me, what offensive weapon does Jameis not have? He has a tight end in O.J. Howard. He has a deep threat in DeSean Jackson. And he has a big body wide receiver in Mike Evans. And he still has, I believe he still has Vincent Jackson. So he has about four guys who can open up an offense that, in my opinion, aside from Atlanta, they might have the best, like, skill positions in the NFL besides Pittsburgh. So
is Vincent still playing? I haven't heard his name none this season.
He's more of like a Larry Fitzgerald type, where he'll just come in and make a great play, and he could go back to the bench. But DeSean and Mike have basically taken all of his snaps, if I'm not mistaken. But he still has all those weapons, and I'm just not seeing him get his feet set. I'm not seeing him make the reads. And then, you know, he's too busy worried about eating his fingers on the sideline. He needs to be worried about that film room, dude, because there are some bad throws. And I mean, just horrible. Film. Yeah, he needs to study more.
He does.
And they need to fire that coach, because their cutter is terrible.
That's their cutter problem.
Terrible. I'm not saying Jameis is irredeemable. All I'm saying is that it's really a stretch to say, though, he's so much better than Tyrod right now. I'm not sure I'd take him over Tyrod Taylor right now.
All right, you take the black Alex Smith you want to.
I'll take
give me Jameis.
That'll make him much better than what he is. You don't need a great quarterback to win a Super Bowl no more, man. All you need is a defense and a game manager. And look at what the Minnesota Vikings have: Case Keenum and a great defense. And well, I'm not sure that Case Keenum is better than Tyrod Taylor.
Oh, okay. Well. Anyway, we'll see. Speaking of backup quarterbacks, Nick Foles is the man right now, and he came back against the Giants, threw four touchdown passes. Like, coming back against the Giants isn't really all that difficult, because they're actually terrible this year. But I think the bigger picture, right, because this year has been all about Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz coming out party. The NFL and media personalities have propped up these young guys, Goff and Wentz and whoever else is out there that they like to say. And so I think the thing is now, and Raph and FIFO put this out there, like, what happens if Nick Foles actually wins the Super Bowl and not Carson Wentz? How does that impact Carson Wentz's legacy?
And Ken, the reason why I pose this is because we've seen Nick Foles have a ball-out season before.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And they're not asking him to play a whole entire season. They're not asking him to be the franchise quarterback. They're asking him to just take over. And where Carson Wentz has left this team, it's not like Nick Foles' skills are that much different. Obviously, Carson Wentz is a little bit more mobile. I'll give him that. He's a better athlete than Nick Foles. But in terms of pocket awareness, presence, arm, they're not that far off. You know what I'm saying? So when I was thinking about the question, I was just like, man, if I was Carson Wentz in this situation, I would be happy, because obviously I know I contributed to the Super Bowl, but I'd be pissed because I know that my name wasn't the starting quarterback of that Super Bowl. And what, like, how internally would I feel about that? Because, yeah, we won, but I wasn't the guy. And they paid me to be the guy, or they drafted me to be the guy. They haven't paid him yet. But, you know, he's supposed to be the guy. He's gotten him this far. So I don't know, man. I know I would feel a certain type of way. Even though we won, I think that would just give me more ammo to be even better and, you know, to blow out teams next year. Just so everybody knows the difference. Like, yeah, this was my second year. I balled out, tore my ACL. Nick Foles came in. He did whatever. But if we come out here, we're 14-2, 15-1, you know, that's different. You know, that I think that elevates Carson Wentz. And if he could get at least back to the Super Bowl, I don't think he needs to win it, but at least if he could dominate the regular season and get back, I think it would quiet the people if they had something to say about it. But yeah, man, I would just feel some type of way, like, big time.
Q, you the Philly fan here.
Yeah, I don't, man. Look, it's one thing to take over when the team is already in the playoffs, and it's one thing to actually get them to a playoff. You know, as much as I like Nick Foles, for what he could do for us in 2013 when he had that 27-2 season, that was fantastic. But he still lost to the Saints on our home field. So it's like we need to pump the brakes a little bit about, you know, him being not that much different from Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz went to Carolina and beat Carolina. You know what I'm saying? Like, he literally put us in a position to beat the Rams, you know, making all those great throws. And I'm not saying that Nick Foles is not a serviceable backup who can get us there. But like I just said in the last segment, Minnesota Vikings have Case Keenum in there, and they have a good defense. But the one thing that I will notice is that the Philadelphia Eagles, ever since Carson Wentz went down, they've been giving up the 30 points a game. Not saying that Carson Wentz played defense for us, but I will say that when you have a quarterback who's playing at that high of a level and he's keeping a defense on the field, we were eating up the time of possession when we were playing teams. Nick Foles, he's going to miss his throws here and there because he's still a backup. But anyone who says that, oh, well, what did Carson Wentz really do for the Eagles if Nick Foles won? Well, he got us in position to even make the playoffs to begin with. No one thought we were going to win. We beat the Redskins twice. They were supposed to be a better team than us this year. We beat the Cowboys. They were supposed to be the runaway favorite for the NFC East. We beat the Panthers. We beat some pretty solid teams. Only game in which Carson looked average to me was against Seattle, who was fighting for their playoff life in Seattle. And even then, there were a couple throws that I believe he missed that would have probably broken the game open for us. So for Nick Foles to come in and do his thing, I would love to see Nick Foles win that Super Bowl for us, man, be our first one. But I just don't see it for people questioning. And anyone who does question Carson Wentz should really actually pose the question to themselves, how long is the NFL season really? And would Nick Foles have stood up to the test every single week like Carson did, making those miraculous throws, making that rollout throw against the Redskins, making that incredible, you know, duck down and run for 20 yards that he did against the Redskins again, you know what I mean, like beating the Panthers on the road, making that incredible sideline throw to Alshon Jeffrey. Those are things that, as much as I like Nick Foles, I don't see him doing that. And he's definitely the beneficiary of a quarterback who played in an MVP level, who I still believe should be MVP, regardless of what Tom Brady does. It's going to be interesting to see what happens, but I do think that Nick Foles in his playoff run, I do think that we will see the difference between having a Wentz and having a Nick Foles in the starting lineup.
Well, you know, I'm looking at the schedule, and you know, it's not like there's a lot of world beaters on here from Philly. Besides Carolina, that was a good win, 28-23. But, you know, I mean, you beat the Rams. I guess they're legit. But everybody else, man, you know, it's just they're average teams. I think Nick Foles could have won a lot of those games. But it's not about, like, what Wentz has done up to this point. It's like, well, what happens if this happens? Because, you know, people have put that out. Like, I would feel some kind of way like, this is supposed to be my MVP year. In my second year, I was in position. Thanks, you know, I got us to the point. Like you said, Wentz got us here. Wentz put us in position to get to the playoffs. He got hurt. And basically, Foles could, as much as I hate to say it, come out here and get his Brady on and just win the game, win the Super Bowl. Now, they're not going to bench Wentz in favor of Brady, obviously. I mean, in favor of Foles, obviously. But that's supposed to be your Super Bowl. And that's a selfish way of thinking. But what if he doesn't win another one? And the one that he has, he's not even responsible for. So, you know, you may have a good career. You have a Super Bowl ring. But it's not your ring. Like, that ring Bledsoe has isn't necessarily his ring. He just got it. So, you know, I think it's a legit question because they got a shot. They got a shot, you know, to come out of the NFC East. I mean, the NFC. But I don't think they are, because I think the NFC South is not getting enough credit. They have three teams in the playoffs, and nobody's talking about them. So, so I think they, you know, somebody there could get them, and we'll see. You got any thoughts on that, B?
Yeah, I just think, you know, I know people always want to talk about quarterback controversy. I just think, you know, you a backup, you supposed to do. That's why they get you a back. That's why you're a backup. If ever the starting lineup, the starting QB goes down, next man up. So, and I think if Nick Foles can do that and will them to a Super Bowl appearance at the very least, and win a Super Bowl for a, what's that, a franchise first Q? If they win Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So if he can pull that off and get them a franchise first, you know, I think it would just be like, hey, job well done. Thank you for getting us to the Super Bowl and doing what a backup quarterback should do, fill in, you know, for the for our starting guy. But I do agree with people though. I think if that happens, I think Wentz got to come out guns blazing. Like he got to come out guns blazing. They got to start off on, you know, finish the season 14-2 or something like that. Like Carson Wentz had to be like, look, let me show y'all why I'm that starting QB, and this is why. You know what I'm saying? So I think he have to show his ass next season if that happens, if Nick Foles do lead Philadelphia to a Super Bowl winning championship season. So that'd be crazy. But yeah, I just think at the end of the day, sometimes people would look too deep in quarterback controversies. That's what the backup is supposed to do. The backup is supposed to, you know, hopefully get the job, continue with the job and do as much as he can to make sure the team win. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, that's all. That's how I look into it when it comes to like back.
Yeah, that would be hilarious if Nick Foles ended up winning the Super Bowl title for the Philadelphia Eagles.
That would be crazy. Oh my god! Like you said, you know, remember 3-4 years ago, people were hailing Nick Foles as like the next guy. You know what I'm saying? And look at him now. You know, he's a backup QB. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, I think that's a good luxury for Philadelphia to have. You know, if someone like Nick Foles is your backup, like I said, he was once a starter at some point in the league. So. You know, I think it's cool. I just think when you have a backup, he's in there to get the job done temporarily. I don't think it's going to be a long-term thing if he happens to win a Super Bowl.
Really. All right, let's get into some basketball. We're going to, in honor of Kobe Bryant, we're going to give our top 10 later on. We're going to also talk about the Timberwolves. And right now, and I have a question about KD, and we're going to talk some Sixers because I need to – point out something to Ralph, and but before we get into all that, B sent us something in the DES thread about the Celtics trying to get Anthony Davis, and they are vigilant on doing so. And who can you give up to the Pelicans to get Davis? Like, I don't know how you can even make this happen. Is there a path for the Celtics to make this trade happen?
Of course. Look, the Celtics have a plethora of rotational guys that you would want on your squad. Pick them. Terry Rozier, you can take Marcus Smart. I'd even give up Jaylen Brown because obviously he's not more valuable than AD, and you just drafted Jason Tatum. I'd give them what's the big man that they picked up? Shit, I'd give them Al Horford. I'd give them anybody but Jason Tatum and Kyrie Irving. Obviously, you can't trade Gordon Hayward. Technically, you can, but you know, technically, people typically don't trade injured players, but, you know, obviously, IT was traded. It has happened in the past. Shit, you could give them Gordon Hayward if you want to keep Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. There's a multitude of packages. They still have draft picks, Ken. It's crazy. It's crazy what they have. So, if I'm them and New Orleans gives me any type of leeway, or if I feel that I can, I'm throwing the arsenal at him. Because as long as you can keep Kyrie, which obviously you are, you're going to have Anthony Davis, and you have a third guy, which is either Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, or Gordon Hayward, you're going to be fine. Because you will attract other more veteran free agents at a lower cost in the future, you know, to round that out. In addition to, again, you may still have Al Horford on the roster. So they have a multitude of packages that they can give up. And obviously, for a transcendent talent like that, you let pretty much anything go except for Kyrie and Jason.
Yeah, a guy that can't even stay on the court because he stay hurt all the damn time.
It don't matter. It don't matter. Just like Embiid, give him 150 for 30 games. It don't matter, Ken. The eye test lets you know. You already know AD's a top five player skill team.
I don't know. I like Jaylen Brown's ceiling, you know, like for a couple of years, everyone was talking about how he needed to trade the picks and whatnot for Paul George. But I see a lot of Paul George and Jaylen Brown. So why trade for a Paul George if you could just develop him? So I don't know if that's, you know, I don't know if that's good enough to give up for Anthony Davis.
You don't know what the Pelicans might want. Like, what if they, you know, what if you're the Pelicans and you have a chance to trade off Anthony Davis for some Celtics players, who are you asking for? You know what I'm saying? Like, who would you want? And let go give him everybody. Anthony Davis? Huh?
Ralph said give him everybody except Kyrie and Tatum.
So Kyrie and so even Brown, Jaylen Brown. So everybody, pretty much everybody's untouchable except for Brown, except for Tatum.
If that's what it takes. That's all I'm saying. That's what it takes. Obviously, you want to keep him. You want to try to keep Horford as well. You want to keep – look, in a trade, you want to win the trade, right? Give up the least amount of assets and get back the bigger asset, right? That's the goal, right? That's negotiating. But negotiations, both sides have to come away feeling okay. So, obviously, they're going to require a lot more than just that. So, all I'm saying is for that type of transcendent talent, yeah, you let it all go, except for Jason Tatum and Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, and Anthony Davis is way better than Jaylen Brown will ever be.
Yeah, I would say, if I was Pelicans, I'd be like, all right, Brown, Tatum, and a pick.
So you would give up Tatum too?
Yeah, I'd say Brown, Tatum, a pick for Anthony Davis. But then again, like, you got to think about contracts too, because Anthony Davis, he only got like how much money? You know, huh?
Yeah, he got
220? Yeah, I was going to say, wait a minute. They have to look at the money terms as well, too.
Yeah.
As far
as
he got a huge contract.
Yeah, you can't just trade Jaylen Brown because he's still on a rookie deal. That's why I said you might have to throw in Marcus Smart, even though they haven't agreed to a contract extension just yet. But obviously, you could throw him in to make the money more. Obviously, Al Horford, outside of Kyrie and Gordon Hayward, have the biggest contract, so you're probably going to have to throw one of them.
You got to put that in, even out the money, yeah.
Exactly. Go ahead, Q.
Do you think it's worth it if you've given up all your depth, like that kind of... At the end of the day, is Kyrie and Anthony Davis enough to beat Golden State or Houston in a seven-game series?
Kyrie, Anthony Davis... Gordon Hayward, Jason Tatum, yes. And the thing is that if you make that move and obviously you get rid of some of your depth, it's not about necessarily beating them this year, right? Because Boston's idea isn't to beat LeBron now. It's about beating LeBron in the future. And AD is still, what, 25, 26?
I think he's 24, isn't he?
24? You know, Kyrie's 25. Gordon Hayward's 27, Jason Tatum is 19. So to me, you make that move because in the future, you'll be able to get veteran players at minimum contracts to fill out that roster. And your core guys are still young enough. You know what I'm saying? So to me, yes, you make that move. Because who's the better player in this? They don't have nobody as good as AD. Yes, you make the move.
Right. Man. Like, he just rotting away in New Orleans, man. He need to lead that organization.
Yeah, they balling, but you know it's like it's the LeBron thing. This is where I have to question organizations, right? And sometimes you have to do it right, and by doing it right means that you can't expedite the process because it is a process. Ask Philly. You got to draft the talent, right? Look, the team I always go to as an example is the Atlanta Hawks. We have been in playoff purgatory. We're good enough to make the playoffs, but we're not bad enough to get anybody that really counts in terms of the draft. Because if you look at the majority of championship teams, they draft one or two main guys. Every single one of them. Isaiah Thomas was drafted by the Pistons. Magic Johnson was drafted by the Lakers. Larry Bird was drafted by the Celtics. LeBron was drafted by Cleveland. You know what I'm saying? You have to draft
and
build the culture.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to see this again is the 04 Pistons, the way Joe Dumars built that squad.
Yeah.
That's the only exception to the rule. Like, I've never seen nothing like that before.
But think about it. He still drafted three players of that core unit: Ben Wallace, Richard Hamilton, and
Ben Wallace was undrafted.
But still, nobody else picked him up except for Detroit.
I think he played for the Bullets first.
Did he? I thought he was like an overseas D League type player, and then he got.
I'm researching, but he played with the Bullets before he.
He played with the Bullets, and then he played a year with Orlando. I just looked it on my basketball reference.
He was playing like the only player he drafted was Tayshaun.
Oh yeah, you're right, because Richard Hamilton
and Darko Milicic.
Yeah. Could have had Carmelo. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. So I said the 04 Pistons is the only exception to the rule where
I agree.
He didn't build that team the, you know, supposedly right way.
Yep.
Like that's
yep,
crazy.
Yep. But every other team, right? Like there's always gonna be exceptions to the rule. But you got to go with the majority. You gotta draft guys.
You gotta draft them.
Dang. Okay. Well, this storyline has been going on for years, so we'll see what happened with that. Something happened. Davis don't trust the organization because of what happened to DeMarcus last year. So even though he talked to the GM, you know, he still don't really believe him. So anyway, we'll see what happened with that. So I was going to pick up my youngest today from daycare. And I was listening to a lot of sports talk, some of the podcasts, and people, of course, obviously this was Kobe Day and everybody, well, after Kobe Day, and everybody was talking about, of course, comparing Kobe to MJ and then LeBron, and Kevin Durant didn't really come up. And when I was driving, I was thinking we already know what MJ and Kobe can do. And I'm thinking about the game today and in terms of how KD plays, his overall skill set. And I'm like, well, couldn't KD be better than MJ and Kobe? Like, take away the mamba mentality or the will to kill that MJ has. Like, why don't people look at KD in the same light that they do MJ and Kobe? Like, when you look at what KD is, an unstoppable force when he wants to be. He just drilled a game winner last night. But again, it seems like he's often left out of these conversations, and I don't understand the reasons why. So say, for instance, KD go off and win 5 more rings. Will we start looking at KD in this? Will KD pop up in these conversations?
When you look at the amount of lists out there involving people who, you know, say the greatest, they're ranking their top 10, their top 25 and whatnot. They have guys who their career path just went differently from a guy like KD. KD has all the skills in the world. You know what I'm saying? He has all the talent in the world. But I think the thing that separates him from a LeBron, a Kobe and a MJ is the fact that I don't think KD prides himself on going down as one of the greats. Like, sincerely, I really don't think he cares. I think he's so self-involved with just this sounds like something he would probably say, his own happiness. I think that's really what, like, matters to him more than anything else. I think he's one of those guys who's like, as long as I can look myself in the mirror and say that I hooped and I had a great time, that's all I care about. I think he's that dude. You know what I'm saying? He's not the guy who's like sitting in his mirror in his, you know, mansion bathroom thinking about, man, I could have, you know, did so many more better plays last night, man. I need to get better than LeBron. I probably need to show people that I can average a triple-double. I need to take a better leadership role. Nah, dude, KD's too busy on his burner account. You know, like, he's living his best life, man. He doesn't care about being top 5, top 3, top 2, because he knows that his skill is going to immediately, by the end of his career, he's probably going to be, this is an easy statement to say, but he's going to be a top 15 player of all time. I think he's already top 25, so it's not going to be that much of a stretch if he ends up being top 10, top 7. But KD is not concerned with greatness the way that LeBron and Kobe and Michael were. Now, whether you think that's a problem is a different conversation. But for KD's mentality, just from reading all his quotes about how Do you all remember before the finals last year? I did this year actually. When he was, when we were having the same conversation, it was us four, and we're reading the quote where Katie's like, you know, I'm not concerned if we win or not, as long as I can go out there and say I gave it my all. Do you really think that's something that a LeBron, a Kobe, or a Michael would ever say?
LeBron would say it.
LeBron said it in the finals where he was like, yo, I averaged a triple double, I'm good.
But that's a different story though. Because he knows that KD, Steph, Draymond, and Klay, that's kind of, you know, that's a one of the greatest teams ever assembled. So he couldn't really do much with it when Kevin Love is not helping out, Kyle Korver is not hitting shots. He knows what he did. But before a finals, LeBron, Kobe, and Michael have never said anything to that extent of, as long as I do my thing, I'm cool. No, they want to go out there and get that ring. I'm here to get this ring. Well, KD is right. Very nonchalant.
But Q, you got to also understand their trajectory of their career, right? And what their career was supposed to be before they even stepped foot on the NBA court. LeBron was deemed as the savior. KD was just deemed as another great player. And they're just held to two different standards, let's be honest, right? Because LeBron is the face of the league, and he has been for about 10 years, maybe more, right? Where KD has never been the face of the league. KD has the talent to be, but nobody ever regarded him as that, right? And then we question, well, shouldn't he be? Can't he be? He can, but he's not LeBron. This is LeBron's league, the same way it was Michael Jordan's league, and the same. And Jordan was so far leaps and bounds ahead of everybody else, just like LeBron is now. They're so far ahead that you can't compare nobody to him right now. That was the difference with Kobe as well. Like, Kobe wanted to be great, but let's be honest, Kobe had guys at his level. He wasn't leaps and bounds better than the best guys of his era. He was on the same level with the majority of them. Jordan was not. LeBron is not. And that includes KD. And I don't think that unless KD came out here averaged about two blocks a game, three steals a game, was defensive player of the year, because obviously LeBron has finished in top two, top three voting in that category. KD has it. KD doesn't dominate the entire game like LeBron does. Now, are we saying, now the question is KD a better scorer? Of course, right? Just like, oh, LeBron, MJ. Yeah, MJ's a better scorer. Okay, or it's fine. Whatever. Well, I'll give you that. But outside of that, what does KD do better than LeBron? LeBron has had more responsibility on his shoulders and have proven more with less to me than any other superstar in the history of basketball. Than any other superstar. So because of that trajectory, KD is predispositioned not to be in the greatest conversation. He's just a great player of his era.
But he should be. You're the second best player in the world right now. Why are we not having GOAT conversations about you?
Because he's not dominating defense as well as he dominates offense. He never has. Yeah, he's better with Golden State because they ask him to do more.
But he was great with OKC.
He was good. He wasn't
no. Don't disrespect KD like that. He wasn't good.
Has KD made all first defensive teams?
I'm talking just great. He was a great player in OKC.
I'm not diminishing that, though, Ken. We know that he's a great player, but we're trying to nitpick and figure out why he's not regarded as, like, the guy. And I'm trying to tell you why. How many first-team all-defenses has KD made?
I'm on here now. I don't see any. I'm on Basketball Reference. I don't see any.
All right, then. My point is proven.
I think it's kind of like when you think about Bird, and you think about Magic, how when they came in, they were going to be their respective kind of saviors. Well, more in Bird's case, but for Magic and Bird, they were looked at as the special ones. You know what I'm saying? When you look at LeBron on the cover of Slam magazine, Return of 23, that sets a precedent. With KD, this kid coming out of Maryland, who went to Texas, everyone was like, man, this guy has an arsenal for offensive game. But it's the difference. It's kind of like this, Ken. It's like the Carmelo syndrome again, man, where he's a fantastic offensive player who, you know, has all this arsenal and not. But when it comes down to it, he's not LeBron James. He's not looked at as this sequel to – everyone runs an era. So for last era, it was supposed to be Kobe, And the era before that, it was Michael. And before that, it was Magic and Bird. The heir to this, to the generation after Kobe, was LeBron James. Kobe and Tim Duncan said that. Tim Duncan said that after the finals, this is going to be your league soon. Kobe said that it's him and LeBron, and how they wanted to go head to head to see who was going to have the crown in 2008. Didn't end up. No one's looking at KD as like this, guy who's supposed to be the heir. It's very up in the air, no pun intended, for who's the guy after LeBron. People say that KD is the second best player in the world, but I don't think anyone's ever said that, oh, this is going to be KD's league after. I think it's very debatable. It could be Kawhi Leonard's league, man. It could be Embiid's league. It could be AD's league. It's not cemented that this is KD's league after LeBron leaves, and I think that's why we don't look at him like this guy who's supposed to be in these GOAT conversations, because number one, I don't think he wants to be, and he makes it a point not to be. And number two, I just think that there are other guys who could have something to say about that.
Yeah, that's crazy to me. I think it's going to be Embiid's league, and I'm going to use that to segue into the Sixer conversation. And mainly it was the OKC game, the triple OT game. And I just noticed something, man. Like, I know Raph and I disagreed about whose team that is, and whose team it will be. I think it's going to be Embiid. Raph thinks it's going to be Ben Simmons. But what I saw in that game, it was clear to me that Embiid's going to be the guy on that team, because he led that team down the stretch. He made plays. He hit big shots. He made great defensive plays. And Ben Simmons didn't even score until he got an assist from Embiid. Now, we've seen, like, to me, I remember when, everybody remembers when LeBron played his first game, and I remember when Wade played his first game. Like, you just saw it, man. And when I see Ben Simmons play, yeah, he's playing great, but again, I think there's something missing from him that I just don't see superstar talent just yet. I see a guy that can ball.
It's a jumper, Ken. It's a look, his game is not complete by no stretch of the imagination, and Joel Embiid's game is more complete right now. Joel has 3-point range, has solidified mid-range, has in between mid-range and back to the basket. Joel Embiid is one of the most complete players in the NBA, and that's crazy to say, scary to say, of a guy only 3 years in, he's only played like 40, 50, 60 games, right? Like, that's extremely scary to think about. But with all that being said, the reason why I say it's Ben Simmons' squad, or it will be Ben Simmons' squad, is because he's the primary ball handler. And yeah, Embiid, see, this is like that Skip Bayless debate. When it comes down to the stretch, who's going to take the last shot? It ain't going to be Ben Simmons. You're going to get the ball to Joel Embiid. But you don't get to that point in the game most nights without Ben Simmons, right? Now, can Joel Embiid shoulder the load? Of course. We saw it last year, right, when Ben Simmons was out early on. He was doing exactly what he's doing right now. So we've seen it. We know he could do it. But I think that the engine that's going to drive that squad is Ben Simmons. And once Ben Simmons gets a consistent, at least mid-range jumper, he don't even need a 3-point shot right now. But once he gets a consistent mid-range jumper where you cannot go under the screen, under the 3-point line, that, like, how are you going to stop? You already can't stop him. You already can't stop him. And when it comes down to those crunch time situations, he has the LeBron effect, where what's his go-to move? What is Ben Simmons going to do to get the bucket that his team needs if it's not in transition or him just playmaking? It's extremely difficult. So that is where he has to learn from his predecessors. I need to have go-to moves in crunch time because they're going to call on me to get buckets and to create buckets, and not just Joel Embiid. And I think once he gets to that point in his career, I think that's when it's going to be clearly his team.
I mean, clearly he's still a highly intelligent guy. Like, for him to come through and get in position to score the layup or the dunk or whatever he got, I mean, that was great. And he plays within the confines of the system that Brett Brown has going. And maybe it is unfair. Maybe, yeah, he's still a little raw offensively. So when it comes late in the games, he doesn't probably have a move to go make that big basket. But I don't know, man. Like, Embiid, I haven't seen anything like him ever. And it's just – crazy, and I think his mama mentality, right, that he has, is there, it's evident, and his willingness to compete and talk shit, like, that's what you want in a player. And I, you know, hey, Embiid's a type A. I don't know what Ben Simmons is. He's clearly not, at least to me, a type A personality. What do you guys think about that, BOQ?
Do you mind if I jump in just real quick? Okay. I think both of you are right on a couple of points. I personally, as a Sixers fan, I think this is Joel Embiid's team, and I think it always will be his team. But I don't think that's a slight for Ben Simmons. I think Ben Simmons shoots with the wrong hand. He's ambidextrous. But he shoots with the wrong hand. When he shoots with his left, it looks wonky. It looks weird. And for a guard, he is the point guard. He's about 7 feet, and he's the point guard. So he's kind of going to have to go through that maturation that Giannis had to go through. Not saying that Giannis is like this incredible 3-point shooter now. Like, he struggles still, but it's respectable at least when he gets hot. You know what I'm saying? Like, Ben, he won't even attempt one because he knows how weird it's going to look. Giannis can, you know, at least pull up sometimes and get in and, like, get you a bucket. As weird as it may look, he's going to get it for you. Ben doesn't attempt it because he is not confident in that shot. The reason why Joel Embiid, this is his team, and I think it will be for the foreseeable future, is because he's an anchor on both ends of the floor. Not to say that Ben Simmons is not already one of the better defenders on the team. I just think that Joel Embiid completely shuts off the paint, so people will not even try to drive on Ben. So Ben is able to stick with people because he's very quick. He's incredibly fast. And in fact, there's a stat that shows that people who are fast with the basketball, basically – and Ben Simmons is top five in the NBA when he's pushing the ball up the court. He's 7 feet. And like the other two are like Kyrie, John Wall, Russell Westbrook. Like, he's up there with guys who no more than 6'4", 6'5". So that's a very important thing to think about, is that Ben is a great defensive player. It's just the offensive deficiencies that keep him from being the guy right now. And please keep in mind, this guy is a rookie. I hate when people say that, oh, it's his second year, he's not really a rookie. No, you're a rookie, man, because you can watch all the film, lift all the weights and whatnot. That's still not going to stop Zach Randolph from dropping 27 on you tonight. You know what I'm saying? Like that stuff still matters to go out there on the floor and actually play. Joel Embiid, he has the ability to face up, back to the basket, shoot the three, mid-range, defense. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, he just does everything that you need him to do. He's probably the most complete player besides LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and Kawhi Leonard in the NBA. And, you know, probably throwing KD. But the reason why I think it also will be Joel Embiid's team is just because I think Joel Embiid embraces that moment. I think he definitely has that dog in him where he wants that ball. He's getting double team, triple team. But when it's time for Ben to assert his will, Ben can only do so much, because if he drives in the lane, he's not confident in his free throw. So he's going to go up to the hoop bullish very much. And he's not confident in his shot mechanic. But this is not to say that I still don't think that this is very much Penny and Shaq-like. I still think that you would argue that was very much Shaq's team. But Penny was so incredible in what he did. And I think that's going to be basically the same thing for Ben Simmons. And who's to say that Penny was not going to become the superstar? And along with Shaq, who was already a budding superstar himself. I think that Ben, by the time that they're both in their fourth or fifth season, I think that they will have a rapport where it's like, damn, we cannot stop these guys. What do we do? I think Ben just needs to focus on getting an elbow jumper. I think he needs to focus on getting a pull-up within 15 feet of the basket and hitting open threes. Because I don't think he's ever going to get to a point where we're saying, damn, Ben has a consistent 3-point shot. But I think it should be enough to where it has to be respected so he can use his speed to drive to the cup. Because right now people are just sitting on him and daring him to shoot the ball. And he's made a couple elbow jumpers, so there's progress there. But you can't expect the guy to fix his shot in the middle of the season. So I do agree with FIFO that Ben is going to be a superstar. But I also agree with Ken that it will be Joel Embiid's team.
Yeah, Q, you made a good point with the Penny and Shaq comparison. Because, I mean, yeah, at first when Ken was saying it, I was like, nah, Ben is the guy. Ben is he's the guy. He's the engine. But I can see off personality and the moxie that Embiid shows, I can see why, you know, I understand why you can say it's his team, because he has that attitude. He has that will to win. He shows it out there on the court. He wants to win. He talks junk. He backs it up. Everything. So and people, the city feeds off that. The team feeds off that. So in a sense, from that seeing that, you can say, yeah, that's Joel Embiid's team. But yeah, I think they both gonna end up being both superstars in due time. Once Ben, this is Ben's first full season really playing. He's going to get that jumper, man. You know, LeBron didn't have that jumper when he first came in his first 2-3 years in the league. He developed it. I think it's going to be the same way with Ben Simmons. I think Ben Simmons is going to develop a jump shot at some point. I mean, most athletic, wingy guys that don't have J's that's going to be in this league for a long time, they're going to develop a jump shot. So I think Ben Simmons' J is going to come in due time. It might not come next year. It might come the year after that. We never know. But, yeah, I do. And that was a good point he made with the whole Penny and Shaq, because, you know, if it wasn't for Penny's injury, we would both be saying both of these guys are superstars. You know, they are superstars in the league. And I think that's going to be the same way with Ben and Joel, man. They both going to be superstars of the team.
B, and do you remember the personalities of Penny and Shaq? Penny was a very quiet guy.
Yeah.
He was not this boasterous.
He spoke with his game. His game was so dead.
And what does Ben do? Ben does not go out there on social media wilding like Joel does. He's not, you know, ha-ha on the court talking trash to Carmelo Anthony. But Shaq was that guy. Was the guy.
That was a good analogy. That was a great comparison.
So I think we're going to see that. You know, and this is not a slight to Ben. I think it just shows you, bro, it's really not a stretch. And I'm going to give this hot take right now. It's really not a stretch. If health is no concern, Joel Embiid could be a top 10 player of all time, dude. Like, that talent doesn't – like, he's a freak.
Yeah.
The ability to rebound, defend multiple positions at 7'2", to be able to have that twitch, to be able to go out on a switch and guard John Wall and force a turnover, that 7'2 centers don't do that. To be able to ice the game at the free throw line, centers don't do that. Like, he literally has top 10 player of all time potential. It's just that health is really what it is. And right now he's been sitting out with a sore back. So Ben has been able to carry some of the load. But I think we're hitting a wall now, because a lot of the guys that we've signed, where we're realizing how shallow of a bench we truly have. Plus, let's not forget this. Ben is going to be better when Markelle Fultz comes back. I think Markelle Fultz definitely has like a CJ McCollum type of potential. But it has to be shown.
Oh, CJ McCollum. Oh, I heard TJ McConnell. My bad. That's why I laughed.
No. Like CJ. No, I definitely see that in his game. I'm not gonna go like to some scouts and say that he has James Harden, because that seems like a stretch right now. But who knows, man? Stranger things have happened, and I think that the core of Embiid, Fultz, and Simmons, that's gonna be special. And I think we have to give it time to develop. And I think Ralph would tell you easily that jumpers don't happen over one season. They don't even happen over two seasons. Right. It takes a little bit of time, man. It definitely takes time.
All right, well, before we get to our top 10 players of all time, Ralph, you wanted to talk about the Timberwolves and Thibodeau. What's up?
Yeah, man. You know, I love Tom Thibodeau. Y'all know that. Y'all been following the show. B, Ken, y'all know, because we talk basketball all the damn time. I love Tom Thibodeau, but I think it's time for me to be realistic about Tom Thibodeau. I don't think that he is a good coach anymore.
Oh, and wow.
We knew that offensively, he's not the guy. Defensively, we know what type of maestro he is. But when you look at what Minnesota is producing, they're not a top 10 defensive team. We thought they were going to be that with the addition of Jimmy Butler and Taj Gibson, two of his homegrown guys in Chicago. We thought that this 15-15 squad, I believe, going into tonight was going to be a solid playoff team. And being at 500 right now, I get, you know, you're trying to add.
They're 18-13.
18-13. Okay, I'm sorry. 5 games over 500. They should be better. And the thing is when I watch them, I don't know what's going to get better for them offensively. And I'm scratching my head defensively. And beyond all of that, have you guys watched the minutes that he's giving his starters? Tom Thibodeau is playing an 8-man rotation. right? He's like Jimmy Butler in the last week has played over 42 minutes a game. Carl Anthony Towns up there as well. Wiggins up there as well. It's, you have an 8-man rotation. People are going to play over 30, 40 minutes, you know what I'm saying, a game. And I don't – if we look at the longevity, look at what has happened to Joakim Noah. Joakim Noah is only like 30-something. He's early 30s, and this man looked like he's 50. Luol Deng looks like he's 50. And that was all of those minutes that they logged for Chicago under Tom Thibodeau. And I don't want to see that happen to Carl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. I think, and again, I was super excited, super happy that they gave Tom Thibodeau all of the control of Minnesota. But to me, I think they're going to have to move on eventually.
You know, it's interesting because I think Jamal Crawford has had some issues with his playing time. And one of the commentators, I think I was watching the Suns game, and they were talking about him and saying that he understands it, but it wasn't what he was expecting when he got there. And you might be right, because when I watch this team, yeah, they're winning now. I think you can put some of those wins on Jimmy Butler's presence, but sometimes it doesn't look like we know whose team it is. Like, at times, it looks like Jimmy Butler is going to be the guy. Other times, it looks like it's going to be Karl Anthony Towns. Like, Karl Anthony Towns, he's still putting up good numbers, but it's almost like the presence of Jimmy Butler has impacted his play this year, or his impact this year. And Wiggins looks like a role player now. It's kind of crazy to see this. And it's not like he doesn't have guys that can go to, you have players.
Mm-hmm.
You have players that you can play. So maybe you're right. I never thought about that, so I'm going to have to think about it some more. But maybe that's one of the reasons why he plays his starter so much, because he's not good enough to utilize his bench effectively as a coach.
Maybe, but, you know, like when we look at great players, and let's say they underachieve under a different regime, we're going to say, okay, you make a head coaching change, you make a front office change, and these guys should improve. That's what happened. And what type of impact has Tom Thibodeau had on these guys, right? Like, we're almost halfway through the season, and I can honestly say I don't see it. And I think that's a big problem, because defense is supposed to be easily taught, especially – okay, let me not marginalize it like that. But when you have a guy like Tom Thibodeau teaching you defense, if Tom Thibodeau can hide Carlos Boozer, Tom Thibodeau could teach defense. You know what I'm saying? So to have him, and he has not had a defensive impact on Andrew Wiggins or Karl Anthony Towns, that is concerning. The fact that these guys are playing all of these minutes, guess what? The top guys in the NBA, right? The top coaches have a rotation where their best players are going to play, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're not going to play the beginning of the fourth. They'll come in maybe at the earliest 9-minute mark, 8-minute mark, and then they'll close out the game. Where Tom Thibodeau is having guys play from the 3-minute mark left in the third quarter throughout the fourth quarter. So guess what happens when those starters get back into the game? They're gassing the Minnesota starters. And they have to dig deep to try to eke out these wins. And to me, that shows a lack of trust, a lack of coaching, a lack of, you know, maximizing your bench depth. Because you know what? Every team isn't as deep as Golden State or Cleveland or some of these upper echelon teams. But guess what? You have to make do. And I when I'm watching Tom Thibodeau now, because what was the complaint in Chicago? Oh, he doesn't have enough wing talent. It's just D Rose and defense, right? But now, bro, you got Jimmy. You got Andrew Wiggins. You got Cat. You got your own guy, Todd Gibson. And let's not forget Gorgui Dieng, because he ain't no chopped liver. You know what I'm saying? Like he has guys. So what's the problem? And let's not forget Jeff Teague. He has guys. What's going on? I don't get it. I think it's Tom Thibodeau. And as much as I love him, I don't think he can be a head coach anymore. I think you got to move on.
You know, listen to you all. It's so funny. Because I was thinking the exact same thing last week. I was talking to my boy, and he's a Minnesota fan too. And, dude, I have questions about this entire Minnesota team, dude. I'm being so real with you. I've never been a huge Jeff Teague fan, and I wasn't a fan of that signing. And I'm looking at Cantor Enos Towns and Andrew Wiggins, man. They are really underperforming for me. I have questions about Cat's defense. I have questions about Andrew Wiggins as a player, man. He looks like he's going to be, what's his name, 2.0. Boy, who Wesley Johnson, man? Like he's like I don't know, man. Like,
no.
I'm going there. I'm going there, dude. I just don't see it. Everyone was saying that he was gonna be this, you know, great wing player, and I can't tell you, he looks like he's gonna be a role player. And why in the hell is Jimmy Butler in the game with a minute left and y'all are up 20 points? Like I just don't understand Tom Thibodeau. You know, Fifo, if you actually go back. Because JJ Redick, he does a podcast now, and they had Carl Anthony Towns on the podcast, and they were talking to him about minutes and Thibodeau, because they know the stigma on Thibodeau, and they know exactly, you know, kind of the narrative around how he keeps guys in too long, the whole Derrick Rose being in against the Sixers, what if he pulled them, you know what I mean, like those type of things. And Cat was like, I mean, yeah, I don't feel like I should be playing 40 minutes a night, but, like, I just want to play, and I can't concern myself with that, and I'm young. Like, if Carl Anthony Towns, who's, like, 22 years old, is seeing this as a 22-year-old guy, then you know that the veterans are looking at him like, why am I not in the game? I didn't like the Jamal Crawford signing. I didn't like the Teague signing. And out of one, I think Jamal Crawford is kind of washed now. I did not like anything that he did for the Clippers last year, especially in the playoffs. But you look at the entire coaching staff, and you look at how they play, there's so many lapses on defense. There's so many guys who can't get over picks. And I agree with FIFO all the way down to a science that I think this might just be the end of Thibodeau as we see it. But it's sad that the Minnesota Timberwolves are so hyped because they finally feel like they have this team. I fear that they won't see this until one of these guys ends up getting hurt or one of these guys finally voices their opinion. Because right now, everyone's just riding this high that they have Jimmy Butler, Carl Anthony Towns, and Andrew Wiggins. But after a while, you have to start performing the way that you're building your squad. And Thibodeau, I think he leaves guys in too long. And I think guys, in terms of a talent standpoint, we need to start questioning if it's more of a Tibbs thing or if it's more of a Wiggins and Carl Anthony Towns as a ceiling type thing. Because I was told, coming out of Kentucky, that Carl Anthony Towns was a two-way player. Over these last 2 years, I feel like I've been proven completely wrong that he was a two-way player. And I'm looking at Wiggins like, dude, your IQ, man. You're shooting some shots that are just – you need to make that extra pass. There are guys in the corner who can hit that three and knock it down. But you're taking on, you know, a one-on-one for an ISO and getting a bad shot. Those type of things have to be called into question.
People made all the great points, man. I mean, if that's the case, then maybe it is time for Tibbs to go, because we went into this season with high expectations of Minnesota. You know, we were saying – they was going to be 7-6, I think as high as maybe a possible 5 seed if play right and coach right. So, yeah, maybe this is time, man. Time for the coach. Because I like Tibbs, too. I've always liked Tibbs. So maybe this might be time for him to pack it on up and go. Maybe the Minnesota organization might have to move on. And I don't know what other coach they can get, but go with somebody else.
Mark Jackson. I'm always root for the brother to get a job somewhere.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. Well, right now they're fourth. They're fourth in the Western Conference at 18-13. Portland, Denver, OKC, and New Orleans are behind them. San Antonio, Golden State, and Houston ahead. So, but it's a long season. But yeah, the way they fell apart in the fourth quarter against the Suns, and it didn't look like they had a go-to person at all, or even they knew who the go-to person was a little concerning for me, especially when you're this far into the season and you know, play what 31 games. So we'll see. Just something to watch. We'll keep our eye on that as the season goes on. So now, it's time, before we close out the show, We will give you our top 10 players of all time now that Kobe Bryant is officially done.
Yeah, let me bring up my list. All right, cool.
Uh-oh. Let's go.
So I'm going to start at number 10. Number 10, don't be saying, uh-oh, Ken. Come on, man. I know what the hell I be talking about. Number 10, I got Hakeem Olajuwon. Number 9, I got Larry Bird. Number 8, I got Wilt Chamberlain. Number 7, I got Kobe. Number 6, I got Tim Duncan. Number 5, I got Shaq. Number 4, I got Kareem. Number 3, I got LeBron James. Number 2, I got Magic. Number 1, I got Jordan.
Showing Hakeem some love, man. I appreciate that.
I always liked the man, just not more than Shaq.
Hilarious.
You crazy. But anyway, you ready, Q? What you got?
All right. Number 1, let me get Michael Jordan. Number 2, let me get Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Number 3, let me get LeBron James. Number 4, let me get Magic Johnson. Number 5, let me get Tim Duncan. Number 6, let me get Kobe Bryant. Number 7, let me get Larry Bird. Number 8, let me get Dr. J. I don't care what no one says. Number 9, let me get Hakeem. And number 10, let me get Shaq.
All right, so for me, mine might be the most controversial list out of everybody, but that shouldn't be a surprise. Number 10, give me Dwayne Wade. Number 9, give me Larry Bird. Number
Tripping
8.
Already. Already. Number 10, you tripping already.
Oh, man. All right, so number 8, give me Shaq. Number 7, give me Wilt. Number 6, and I struggle. I really, really struggle with this one because he's my favorite player of all time. My personal favorite player of all time, Hakeem Olajuwon, number 6. But I'm trying to be fair and unbiased here as much as I can. Number 5, man, Magic has some crazy numbers. So, and I struggle with him, but give me Magic. 4, Kareem. 3, Tim Duncan. And, of course, 2 is LeBron. And number 1 is MJ. And I've kind of flip-flopped between them two, but I'm going to respect MJ, man, and give him the respect he deserves. I don't think LeBron's there just yet.
Okay, so I'm going to do my list based off players that I've seen, I guess. So, yeah, at number 10, yeah, I got to go with Zeke. At number 9, I'm going to go – at 10, I'm going to go Tim Duncan. 9, I'm going to go Zeke. At 8, I'm going to go Hakeem Olajuwon. At 7, I'm going to go Bird. At 6, go Kobe. At 5, Magic. At 4, LeBron. I mean, yeah, 4. Wait a minute. Yeah, Magic. Say Kobe. That's, Magic is what, 5, right? 4?
Yeah, Magic is 5.
Magic is 5. 4, LeBron. Did I say Bird yet?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. 4 be LeBron, Kobe, Kareem, and Jordan.
No, man. This is a hot mess. You said Kobe was...
That?
Wait.
Did I write that wrong?
I thought you said Kobe was... No, you had Hakeem 6, right? All right, run it again. Tim Duncan 10.
Okay, I got Tim Duncan 10, Isaiah at 9. Who's at 8?
I think you're at Hakeem 8.
Hakeem at 8.
This is a hot mess.
It is a hot mess.
Larry Bird at 7. At 6, Kobe. 5, Magic. 4. Say 6 Kobe, 5 Magic, 4. I feel like I'm forgetting somebody. Who the hell am I forgetting? Jordan is gonna be 1. Kareem gonna be 2. 3 would be Kobe. I don't even know who the hell am I
forgetting. No, you said Kobe was 6.
I said Kobe was six?
Yeah.
And LeBron in.
LeBron four, okay.
I'm forgetting somebody.
So we know MJ is one.
Yeah, MJ is one. Kareem, Magic. I said.
You had Magic was five. God dang.
Yeah, that's 10. That's 10 players right there.
You're missing the. Where's Kareem? Is Kareem second or third?
Kareem is second. Yeah, Jordan is first. Kareem second.
So you don't have a third best player yet.
So where's Darko?
Huh?
I said, where's Darko?
Darko, oh, you silly. Yeah, that's my, yeah. Okay, Jordan, Kareem, LeBron, Matt. Well, no, I don't have a four. But, hell, throw in Will Chamberlain just because it's freakish number. Okay.
All right. God dang, B. Oh, man. Wow, you got Tim 10, huh? Dang.
Yeah, I couldn't fix my face to put Tim Duncan over Zeke. So that's why I put Tim at 10.
No, that's that. I mean, but damn.
I know. Personal favorite. Hell, you had Dwayne Wade in your top.
No, I'm not. It's not that. It's like, damn, that seems low for. Ralph, did you have Tim? You had Tim, right?
Yeah, I had Tim. Hold on. Let me see. Let me pull him up.
Five rings, Ralph.
I had him at six. Had him at six?
I just have
to remember my list.
I had him above Kobe. And the only reason why I had him above Kobe was because Tim Duncan was the guy through all of his championships.
Yeah.
So that's why I had to put him over Kobe. And then I didn't see Wilt, but obviously he got the numbers, so he had to make my top 10. Larry Bird, you know, I messed with him. I watched him a little bit. But physically, you know, I think with these guys that I have on the list, he couldn't compete, but obviously the man won championships. Akeem. Had to put him on there because I think outside of Joel Embiid, this sounds crazy, but outside of Joel Embiid, I think he's the most skillful center to play. I think Arvydas Sabonis could be mentioned in that too, but obviously he was never healthy. Shaq, y'all know how I feel about Shaq. I think he's the most physically dominant player to ever play the game, at least the one that I've seen. You know, people will rival Wilt Chamberlain is that, but I'm too young for that. Bron is, you know, y'all know how I feel about Bron. Magic Johnson, the best point guard to ever play. He's the only guy I could watch film, and I don't know where he's passing the ball ever. I pride myself on watching basketball and kind of seeing what the point guards see, but I don't know what the hell he was watching out there. It was crazy. And then, you know, MJ the GOAT, man. Let's be honest. If you're building a basketball player with all of the intangibles, right, with the killer instinct, with the footwork, with enough athleticism and everything, you know, you might build LeBron, but then you might want, you know, a little bit more reliable free throw shooting, so you got to take off some of the weight and height. You know, you might want a little bit more consistency with the jumper, so, you know, you got to take things from here and there, and then that leaves you with Michael Jordan. So, you know, I think MJ's the GOAT.
Yeah, and for those of you asking, if I took my personal favorite off Wade, and was unbiased with that 10th spot, I probably would have put Bill Russell in there. So Kobe still wouldn't have made my top 10 list of GOATs. But yeah.
Before we move on, Trae Young just had 26 points and 22 assists. Ties D1 record for one game.
That boy a problem.
Wait, he is, man.
Dude, that's the dude from Oklahoma.
No, that's Colin Sexton.
Yeah, Alabama is Colin Sexton.
That's what it is.
Young bull. He played out here in Metro Atlanta in high school.
Yeah, but that boy's good.
Yeah, no, Trae Young, man, 26 points, 22 assists. That's you know, I've heard scouts talk about this guy, and they say, you know, he doesn't have the athleticism, the size, and all of this to compete at the next level. Hey, man, I don't care. When you score 26 points and dish out 22 assists, you can play any league. Any league. You can shoot the ball.
Shit, Andre Miller wasn't the most athletic dude, and he did pretty well in the NBA.
Yep.
I mean, he could be like a Rodney Hood from what I've seen, dude. Like, you know, he looks like a better version of that. He got the ratchet on him. That's all I know. He can shoot.
Yeah, he can shoot, man. You know, he's undersized. I think I want to say he's like right at 6 foot, if that. You know, but, hey.
Look,
you know,
it was like 6 foot. 6'2"-ish, but he's a little undersized, so everyone's doubting his athleticism ability to get to the cup. But, dude, he's fearless, man. I take him off the bench.
Oh, no, no, you tripping. Everybody had – look, all I know is this. If you redraft Steph Curry's draft, he's going number one. So I don't see why this guy shouldn't be a top three pick. He's putting up numbers like this. And then especially if he can get his team to the tournament and put up, you know, numbers similar to this, oh, yeah, he's locking himself into top three contention.
I don't know about that, Fivo, because you got guys like Aiden in Arizona. You got Bamba in Texas.
I feel you.
Doncic overseas. But them boys is problems.
I know Doncic. I feel you. I'm probably saying his name wrong. But at the end of the day, right, like it's going to come down to who's picking where. You know, just like this draft this year, I think in the next couple years, because I've been trying to tell you guys years ago that the NBA is about to get really rich with talent, because there's a lot of young guys that are going to be ready to make an impact right away. And we're starting to see that. So I think it's not more so who's more skillful, who's better, who has more potential. It's kind of sort of who's drafting where, because every team in the NBA doesn't have the same type of needs. And I think that if you're drafting that high, right, typically you take the best player available. But I don't think that there is nobody clear cut leaps and bounds ahead better than this other guy or this, that. You know what I'm saying? Everybody still has, you know, like nobody's really separated themselves. So because of that, I think it really comes down to the teams that draft and where they draft.
You know, it's kind of crazy. So when you said Steph Curry will go first, I went to the 2009 draft to see who was picked ahead, and I think
Rubio, that, Johnny Flynn, I can keep
Harden
going.
And Griffin.
Mm-hmm.
So you think
that's it?
Yeah.
Well, those are the only two guys that you might consider taking Steph Curry if you had to redraft. The only two, but seeing what Steph Curry and what those other guys have done, would you not take Steph Curry? I would take Steph Curry.
That definitely taking Steph number one. I think it's just a problem for this kid who's going to be coming out this year, probably. I think there are questions about his size and questions about his toughness and whatnot. But I think there are definitely guys who can give him a run. Like, I think you have to look at Marvin Bagley. I think you look at Mo Bamba, DeAndre Ayton, Doncic, Sexton. Like, I think just as prospects, I like them more than Trae Young. Just personally, this is like a deep dive. I'm not going to go too deep. But just off top, I like them better. But if a team needs shooting and they need creation, that's basically the prototype for, you know, what you want. The difference is that everyone in the NBA, in terms of scouting, they're looking for guys who can switch. They want a bunch of those long 6'7", 6'9", dudes who can switch. And I don't know if you want to invest a top three pick in a definitely a hooper, definitely a flamethrower. But I don't know if he's going to be a liability on the other end of the floor against the big
one. You sound like every other scout talking about Steph Curry. That's exactly what you sound like. And at the end of the day, see, this is the thing I love about basketball. Athleticism plays a part. Size plays a part. But the beautiful thing about basketball, skills are the most important thing. And if you can display them against people that are of more athletic, if you can display your skill against people that are more athletic than you, then you can play at any level. And we're seeing that, you know, like this guy's playing major D1 basketball and he's getting 22 assists. I don't care what league you're in. If he played in the NBA right now, then 22 is probably 9 assists, 10 assists, 11 assists. Like he can play at that level. Again, that's why I said that it comes down to who's drafting where. If the Atlanta Hawks get a top three pick, they're not going to take a point guard because they got Dennis Schroeder. They're going to take one of the big men to complement what they already have going on, right? But if you look at a team like who else is bad that's going to get a high draft pick? I'm kind of drawing the blank. Huh?
Sacramento.
Sacramento already got their young guy at the PG position, so they're not going to draft a PG.
So you got Chicago's bad, Dallas, the Mavericks are bad, Memphis is bad, Phoenix is terrible.
I think it'll be Memphis. The big men like Bagley, Aiden, and Mo are going to be those guys because Dallas needs a big man. I think you could say the Kings probably could use a big man because they're probably going to let Kosta Kufis go. They'll probably hold on to Cauley Stein. I like Trae Young. I remember when he was on a hoop mixtape a couple years ago, and like he was dope. I'm not trying to downplay his skill, all I'm saying is that we can't point to an anomaly in Steph Curry and say that that's the rule. That is the exception. Steph should not be doing this. This is like a one in a million type of prospect.
No,
so I don't think we can bet on Trey to do that.
We saw Steph do at Davidson. Super small school. Got him to the tournament, and he showed out. Oklahoma, yeah, they've had some guys, right? But when's the last time that they really got into a tournament and they were really a problem? Right, Blake Griffin and them. That's the last time we're talking about. Right. You know, we're talking about 10 years. So right. At the end of the day, right, when guys elevate other guys and guys are successful, that supersedes a lot of this analytical. All of it. What do your eyes tell you? And I think that is the fine line that we have to, you know, moving forward in this technology age and all of this stuff. That we can't just jump off the oh well, this guy's bigger, better, stronger. No. What can this guy do? Is he a winner? Can he elevate his teammates? Can he not get cooked on the other end, right? Like if we're questioning his athletic ability and things of that nature, right? And I think he's averaging like 2 or maybe 3 steals a game as well, if I'm not mistaken. So he's playing passing lanes. Steph Curry is not a great one-on-one defender. But guess what? He's played passing.
He's a great team defender, Lou. He's a great team defender.
Yeah, great team defender. AI wasn't a great one-on-one defender, but he got steals. Why? Because he played the passing lane. So you can affect the game to overcome your shortcomings. Because trust me, as a basketball player, I have a lot of shortcomings. But when I'm out there on that court, I guarantee you I flash. People will come to the game and be like, damn, that dude is nice. That's what Trae Young is doing. That's what Steph Curry has done. And all of the great non-athletic point guards that play college ball, you see it because they could dominate at any level. And that's what Trae Young is doing. So I'm not saying that Steph Curry is the rule. I'm just saying trust your eyes. That's all I'm saying.
So let me ask you something. Are you taking – if you're Phoenix, Dallas, let's just throw the Sixers in there because, you know, we never know. Nets, are you taking Trae Young over Michael Porter?
If I'm Phoenix, I would definitely consider it, mainly because we just got rid of our starting point guard in Eric Bledsoe. We have Devin Booker, and that's obviously the future two guard. They just drafted, what's his name, Josh Jackson, which is their future three. I would strongly consider taking Trae Young, mainly because I know Michael Porter could play 3 or 4, but I think he's more of a 3 than a 4. And Josh Jackson, I think, is a kind of smaller 3. So I don't know how you're going to play both of those guys together in the future. So for me, I would strongly consider taking Trae Young.
I feel that.
If I'm
Phoenix. Yeah, I feel that. I just really think, again, when it comes down to where these guys are going to be, you know, in position to be drafted by. Because if we're talking about, like, the Pelicans who missed the playoffs, they're going to be in the lottery probably. I don't know, man. I like Colin Sexton more than Trae Young, but this is a matter of opinion, and I could be totally wrong the same way that you could be totally wrong. So we're just
Colin too. No, I like
Colin. Yeah, Colin's too. Dope.
I like his mentality. You know, anytime you have a scrappy guy, it's hard to not to like him. You know, so I like Colin. Obviously, that mentality. You know, B was asking earlier. You know, who else is cut from a Kobe cloth? Colin Sexton is cut from that Kobe cloth. So you know, like, there's always going to be guys, man. There's always going to be guys. I like Colin Sexton. I don't think that he is as refined as a point guard as Trae Young. I think Trae Young could come into the league and run an offense, you know, especially, you know, the push it. Let's get early buckets. Let's get a lot of threes. I think that's the type of mode that he's in. And I think he can come into the league and be productive right away. I'm not saying he's going to dominate, nothing like that, but he's going to be productive. Colin, I think, on the other hand, he will progress and be good, but I don't think he's going to have immediate impact on both sides of the ball like that. I think offensively, he's behind his defense. And especially playing a one guard in the NBA, that's going to be tough. So I think he's going to need a couple years to develop on that side.
I feel what you're trying to say. I think it's going to be interesting as hell to see what happens around March Madness, who's going to be the number one guy on a lot of mock drafts, because, like, that Doncic kid, dude is like 6'7", man. He's got a ratchet, and he's played D.
Yeah.
I think a lot of teams are going to be bigger than 6'7".
He's 6'8", he's 18, and he's the second leading scorer in the second league in the world. Like, that's crazy.
That's insane. And I think a team is gonna be scared to take him number one because of the stigma around Euros. But I think one team is going to definitely take that chance, and they're going to really be satisfied. I think you got Porter, because he's a question mark because of that back injury, that back surgery. Like, does he stay another year? Even though I think he won't. But what if he ends up coming out? Like, who's going to be the team to take, you know, that Embiid risk of a back injury? But you saw what he could do in high school and whatnot, and, you know, camp and all that. Then you have Bagley. Like, Bagley should be in high school right now. He reclassed, was able to play at Duke this year. He's young as I don't know what, so he's impressionable. You can mold him into a great type of player. He can hit the three with a little bit of consistency. Then you got guys like DeAndre Ayton, who has the body of a 25-year-old man in college, 18 years old, but he has question marks on defense. Then you have a guy like Mo Bamba at Texas. I saw him play at my school. I don't go to Texas. I go to VCU, and we played him. And that kid is huge. He's like 7'2", 7'3". And, I mean, he came down the lane and held the ball up. And I swear on everything, the ball was above the top of the shot clock. And he just flushed it on our 6'10 center. He crushed it. And he plays incredible defense. He has like a 7'7 wingspan playing D. He has – a pretty questionable shot, but the potential for 7'9" defensive all-star. Dude, he's like 7'9", man. It's ridiculous. And he has the potential for, like, no one's getting to the rim on him. So there's so much potential. There's so much, like, gadget niche guys in this draft coming up. And guys like Colin like a Sexton, dude, he's just a hooper, man. He just gets what he needs to get. And playing that, dude, he played 3-on-5, dog. Like, that's just true hoop mentality, right there. It's just, I'm going to get what I need to get. And we're going to see coming up in these next couple months. Normally, I start doing my deep dive on prospects around January, because that's when real basketball starts to get played for college. But it's going to be interesting, man, because I don't know if a team's going to take a Euro number one, but that Doncic kid, he looks like he's going to be like, Dragon Bender plus a Goran Dragic 3.0 with all those intangibles. Cause I've seen him glassing shit, and I've seen him step back like Jimmer on dudes. Like, it's crazy, man.
Well, don't say Dragon Bender. Cause I haven't seen much out of him at all.
No, he's trash. But his skill set he's trash.
Gotcha. So that's going to do it for us. For the rest of the year, man. Next week is Christmas, and then the week after that is New Year's. So you guys enjoy your families. Until next year, enjoy your holidays. Stay safe. And as always, thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. And we'll catch you guys later. Peace.